Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the inside story on cognitive rehab. First, we'll break that apart into inside story and cognitive rehab, which go. So inside stories are sort of, to the outsider, they seem strange, a bit quizzical. You have to actually be in the situation for a while before you're given an inside story, and then you get sort of a profound insight. And again, it's sort of hard to put your finger on a few inside stories. These are just small little logical things that you wouldn't think are significant, but really come to the fore. So just to give an example, I was in a taking over, I suppose, a laser lab, which hadn't been successful for a while. And there was a few things to pick up. You know, the crystals were burning out. So this is a eczema laser pumping a dye laser, which pumps a crystal, which gives you a tunable UV laser. The crystals would be burning out. And then the crystal would be burning out because the pattern would have hot spots in it. So you'd overcook the crystal. Pulled it up, it would be working well, but it'd be overcooking and damaging the crystal. Then the hot spots, you'd be some muck building up on the inside and of this dye cells. You know, the dye would be pumped through it, and you'd look at it for a while, and you check up the chemicals, and the chemicals are perfectly okay, and it'll just dumbfound you. Then you pull out some of the pipes and you say, oh, there's a bit of junk in here. You know, this is supposed to be clean. How's this operating? Is there a leak? And for a long time you go into it, and then you eventually find out that the person was buying, the university is buying cheap methanol from a hardware store rather than reagent grade methanol. Of course, there's his story. So, but again, stuff up doesn't get translated and never got put up the system. No one ever knew about it except myself and a few other people it's miraculously getting back on, and the story was, these people are much better. But it really wasn't. It was just picking up one small thing. And when you're talking to people, that sort of story doesn't make a lot of sense to people outside, and people in the inside, if you told them to that in the first day, they wouldn't get it. But if they get the feeling of the culture of what's going on and who's who and who, you can say, this is one of the little stories that happened. There's a few technical stories like this. Years and years ago, someone came in and he was an expert technician. And he came and he left, and as soon as he left, things began to fall apart. And what he had done as an expert technician was put solder on the copper wires and then actually tighten them up. It looks good, but the solder would work harden and the wires would break off. And of course, it would look so the errors. These are putting together. These are very old computers, you can't. It's too long a story to talk about. People are too quick. But when you're working in the field for a while, sort of a similar inside story was back. I've got to really think of his name. Unfortunately, the first Australia's first computer scientist. I have a bit of a think. Not Maston Beard. There was another one, a very famous one. Oh, Trevor Pearcey. There you go. I'm going through cognitive rehab. So what happens is, like, normally that would have taken an hour, and that takes a shorter amount of time to recall. But he was people nowadays would call them eccentric or spectrum or all this type of stuff. Back then, when the world was young and naive, you could be just who you were. But he put all his diagrams for the next generation of computers in a waste paper basket. And at the critical point in time, a cleaner came and took them all away. And this was a story which was sort of sleeping. It sort of came out 50 years later. There you go, 50 years later, you know, this technician who saw it, but said it to me because he knew that, you know, I would know it and carry on. And look, there's stories like that that abound. And so this is more, when I say insider story, this is for someone involved on just a low level, you know, sort of a highfalutin person that no one's not doing any policy pronouncements or writing papers about it, just as it happens. Stories, sort of surprising stories. And all these surprising stories are, you think along these lines and you're not looking for this particular outcome, but that particular outcome is there, it's dominating the play. Now, cognitive decline or cognitive rehab. Now, it's a thing, sort of it's a hard thing to get about, because a lot of people have a lot of emotion, a lot of preset ways they behave, because a lot of their relatives over time go under cognitive decline. And their contract they have with the relative is no longer relevant, because they either forget things or they're not doing things or they can't fulfill the contract. And so there's sort of these people are, so this is my analysis, sort of sitting back and looking at this type of thing. People have this contract and that they respond a little bit hostilely to them. Even the surface level, they can see Grand's not doing it as much, but then they establish sort of there's a contractual arrangement when the cognitive levels were different. There's a contractual agreement that if I said this will do this and I'll get this in return, blah, 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 this is not happening. So they feel affronted, or they don't know how to deal with it. So you definitely do see the support mechanisms just disappear overnight. You know, your support, if you go through a cognitive decline incident, there's some support, sort of nominal support systems which are there. There's a floodlight on this, but all the other ones have left the room because people are busy. They've got other things to do with it. So there's a practical side to it. There's a historical side. People aren't educated to do with it. And say in my case, I had a fantastic heart operation. I just can't describe what it's like. It's sort of like this, you don't feel you deserve it. This magic fairy comes along and suddenly, you know, breathe and do everything, and you sort of push yourself and stuff. And so there's a series of stories. There's a long, involved story with a heart valve in, and the heart valve having to be replaced after a while, but finally getting back on. But one of the things with the heart stuff, when the heart's not as it should be, there's these clots, and you get these, your brain gets knocked around a bit. And when it gets knocked around a bit, obviously people can describe it from the outside, but describe it from the inside's a little bit different. And so firstly, you're unaware that you've forgotten something. That's the first thing. First thing coming up, depending how you're thinking before going in, you can sort of puts you land in a different spot. So previously, I suppose, I'd come up to a situation, size it up, and pass a little off. I'll say, almost internally, section whatever it is of the brain, A or B or whatever it is, you'll deal with that. Just have you sized it up? Sort of this internal conversation with yourself to look at things in parallel. And the other thing, I suppose, is you're not really aware at you don't really quality assess the quality of information going in. When you are sort of now scrambling along, you then start to quality assess, and it's a bit different. And you unfortunately, one of the things in cognitive rehab, you go back, you say, oh, crap, I was so crap at quality assessing, assessing what's going in, that it's validating things and double checking and getting different angles and researching things. And of course, you sort of know to hunt for, or if you forget things, you want to get things in. So you have these diaries, writing things down, or in my case, doing podcasts. And at the end of the podcast, you do a summary, or you do you prepare a quiz on it, you launch that, you go and listen, and then you do a series of podcasts on an area. It's just to push yourself up a line. So again, I haven't seen anything written which actually describes what it's like to have a sudden cognitive down. It's sort of like you've lost altitude, but there's any instruments aren't showing anything. There's a few things that you press a few buttons and sort of nothing happens at the back end. So you've got some sort of feedback that everything's not quite right. There's a bit of lag in the time. And of course, I suppose basic autopilot of saying you've got to get up. So just to give you, say on the physical thing, when I first sort of came out of the first heart operation, I could barely move one foot in the other. And so it was a big thing to do one lap on the house. And then I did two. And then within a couple of days, I was doing 50 laps of the house. But this is just till you almost broke yourself, pushing yourself to go. And I suppose, yeah, and having heaps of sleep and rest. And of course, one of the things is that if your heart circulation isn't going and it's cold weather, you just absolutely freeze to the core. And then going out and then slight hills are away. This is just a background to the amount of effort to push along. And it is a lonely, hard push. Now, I suppose it depends your background and stuff like that. But if you've been training to do things and you're unpopular, you often have to train by yourself and you have to push it. Or if, say, you've got a deadline to meet, a lab to get going, and the communication, you know, some people have hissy fits. If you want me to do it, you have to pay much more money. I'm so great. Whereas you say, oh, well, I can't do that. I just don't have the charisma. I will have to work continuously. Sometimes I work 48 hours straight, more in a lab to get a deadline, to program, to get everything up. And, people come in and criticize you and don't give you support. And so in order to do it, you have to get up and push and push. And getting up, I began to track where my route by Google Earth, just Google Maps, you can pull up and you can get the gradient and just check that you can just do the gradient and push and push. And come back. I've got this next level just to really push myself on that. So also cognitively, there's that push and push. And I shudder to listen to my first podcast where I was just struggling to breathe and struggling to get things together. But as you do the podcasting and stuff like that, you do some checking. And previously, previous to all of this, I would not get the gist, when something was explained. And then the realization that the people who have put themselves in explaining it have misunderstood it and misdirected the whole system. I've seen it once or twice. I might go, well, I'll just quickly cover that. This is HSC school marking and basic facts and stuff like that. There's a fairly simple run-of-the-mill formula you use to adjust marks. Well, nothing much to it. It's putting a chirp, and I used to put chirps in engravings. This is where the size of the scale unit varies from low to high marks, so you can make the stepper marks slightly bigger than necessary to start off with, and it goes slightly shorter than necessary at the end, and that will actually pull all the marks within a bandwidth up. And so you can, with this process, you can raise and lower the average, so you check the band is correct, and then you raise and lower the average. It sounds very simple. No one has understood that the slightest. And again, pretty well any regulation written out, unfortunately, it's written out by a certain level with a certain bit of maths, certain policy, certain procedure. And there's certain people reading it who are coming in too quickly. They have come in too quickly and made one thing's up, and when they've made one area up, that the whole box and dice is made up. So that's a bit of an unusual thing. So you sort of, when you're researching that where you're working, you say, you can quickly get yourself as put up as a troublemaker, someone who just doesn't go with the flow, doesn't understand the politics, is saying, hey, hang on, should it be this? I can't quite describe it, but it has had some serious effects, like I think they've had to change the emergency care and the anaphylaxis several times, because what's happened is that the actual process is actually harmful by the time it gets through, and then the process changes and goes across. But if at any point in time you're in that training cycle and you put your hand up and said, I disagree, you'd be just exorcised or pushed out of the group. Yet in the fullness of time, you could see, well, the person who was the naysayer at that point in time, it was the safety person saying, hang on, it's not agreeing now. One of the things is that if you are struggling to keep up and processing it yourself, you often say, oh, okay, I've got that much, and then you process it and you turn up at a different point from where everyone else is going. So that's overall things. So there's just a few situations here I'm going on. There's a few situations here where been learning actors' name, relearning. It's not learning actors' name. The actor's name will be in there. I will have watched a movie, know who the actor was, but in reboot, it will take me, or initially it took me a day to redo, an hour, then a couple of minutes, and then there's a time when, say, on the New Year's Day person, a singer came on called Daryl Braithwaite, and I, in my memory banks, he's a famous Australian singer, and there's Jimmy Barnes is another singer, and I had the two files just got completely mixed up with me in my head, and I sort of asked a few questions, which sort of alerted everyone to, oh no, he's cognitive, like someone struggling in the surf, putting your hand up, oh, I don't quite know. But it turns out that the generalised comment in the room, and then on the TV, then on the internet, is that this particular actor has aged to look like that they look very similar. And so that's sort of a bit of a relief. And then there's a sort of very famous theme song called Horses. And I knew it and I had listened to it, but I had heard one section of it, of where they had ridden a horse into it, but I couldn't see that it had anything directly to do with horse. You know, like it would have been horse riding, or the effect of being on a horse. It's called Horses, and it's very much liked. And I said, oh, look, what has it got to do with horses? You know? And then the saying was, oh, well, it's the Caulfield Cup. There's Melbourne Cup. There's a racing festival in Victoria, and this person sings Horses. It's called One Year to Sing Horses. Everyone really liked it. And for every year, for the last 10 years, he's been called to sing this favourite. It's sort of been sucked up into the culture of singing this horses and sort of sentimental time, New Year's. This is a favourite song. They had a voting process, you know, to sing your favourite songs, and gives you amount to say. You have a voting system, so you could say this and this song was voted. And I tried to listen to it again, and I said, look, can anyone tell me? And they just refused. Everyone around me refused to do it. And they said, look, it's about horses. And I said, oh, can anyone tell me why it's to do with horses? And there's this overall aggression. It's sort of like the contract's broken, the aggression. You know, why are you asking this? So nonetheless, I eventually got and typed in Horses by Darryl Bates. Lyrics. Click. So read through. No, it's a few sort of open to interpret paragraphs, and then the theme song over and over again, repeated over again. And really, it's a very simple song, and the fact that it repeats the chorus over and over again about 5 times, 10 times at the end is that people can actually, if they're slightly drunk, can sing along with it like that. And the interpretation. So I want you to have a bird inside you which can scream. Okay, so I sort of understand spiritual birds, stuff like that. I want you to ride with me, but I won't be able to ride exactly with you. Exactly. This is a little bit deep, a little bit complex to do with horses, because this person, this is the lyrics, this person, I won't be able to be with you riding horses, but I'll be there with you even though I can't be there. Okay, haven't got that. If you fall, I'll be there to pick you up, or blah, blah, blah. And breeze, it'll be in the breeze, it's a bit hard to go. And then, you know, a few people saying, oh, I really love this. I played this at my funeral. Or I said, I played at my father's funeral, or something like that. And I didn't understand that I played at my father's funeral. What? This is about a father who's going to die of cancer. And this is a song he wrote to his son, his daughter, saying that, you know, I'm leaving, but... And so this is this. It's not that it's not to do with horses. It's just that there's a much bigger story that no one has understood, and I didn't understand it. But this is what I'm finding over and over again. That as I check things up, I find new information. I think, and there are things that I do find to sort of investigate. People say, "Oh, you've seen that before." Or that has happened before, and I will have to go back and research, is it likely that I have actually watched that, or was I in the room when that actually happened? Did I know this? And, yeah, really small things in that, I'll say, because it's the, as your cognitive thing gets back, you are starting to see much, much finer detail of things, and note things, and it's a real joy. Now, this can be frustrating as hell. Like, did a flight back to Melbourne, and from Sydney to Melbourne, and this time I was going in, because I did it the same time the year before, but had very little memory of it. And going back, I said, oh, this is really intense, and sort of the information flowing in, and speaking to people, and noting things, and knowing all things about the aircraft, and... that was completely forgotten. And, oh my! So you're aware that you've forgotten these segments, but then you go back and you realise that you can summon up small images that were in your head after a lot of effort get all that. So there's the horses theme, but in general, it's over and over again. Another small incident was going back to this Katoomba Centre, and the people with this white marker pen write the order on the plate, and you know, the coffee, if it says a cappuccino, they'll write on the side of the black plate. plate, not on the paper cup, but on the sauce, a white texture. Or cappuccino, whatever it is. Like that. And this time I said, oh, I really like it. It's such an innovation. And they said, oh, you were excited about that last time, which is a bit of a downer. But it's sort of... I had checked, you know, there's other stores that do it. Does anyone else know of it? When did they introduce it? It was starting to walk in that they had introduced it in the last 12 months. And so the reason I didn't recommend it, perhaps they hadn't been doing it before. I'm not quite sure, but you get very much aware of people saying, well, if they can't remember you saying it before, so they just say it's before with that. Now, as your memory or cognitive things come back, this time when I saw there's various, of course you're pushing your memory the whole time, so you see something, you try and memorize all aspects of it. So I had memorized this sort of artwork, which is just a divider of these poles, aluminium poles coming down at angles. It looks okay. It's sort of like disorder and not. But this time when I saw it, I could see it, how it was riveted in. Last time I didn't see it, and I could see a little bit of someone spilled a drink on it and dust and small aspects of it. And then going up, seeing again, I remembered the various aspects going through, and sort of just mentally pushing it through all the time, trying to get on top of things. And I suppose this is one aspect of it. That's in terms of you don't know whether it's you're dumb anyway or things like this. This is today a parrot landed very, very close to me, that is, within touching distance. And I've slowly been, as I've been observing it, picking up more and more information, like these brilliantly coloured, pure red birds with green wings, and I then began to notice that the top of its beak is coloured red. And this time I looked at it and I saw its nostrils, and I realised this is something I hadn't noticed before. It's a very tiny little two nostrils on top of its parrot beak, and the fact that the nostrils can't be used for breathing because the air holes are so incredibly tiny. There's no way that a parrot could breathe through those air holes. And then looking at the eyes, and as I saw the eyes, I could see the width of the yellow band increase, decrease very quickly as it was sighing from the side and changing its focus. And something I hadn't seen before, realizing that the bird is not stereoscopic, it's got one eye on one head, one eye on the other head, and that's how it tells distance, it focuses. And you can see the focusing of the eye, and these are all serious things, similar to the Darrell Braithwaite horses thing. You chat with people and they're just rubbishy. They're saying, what the heck? So boring, just shut up. And the other thing is the parrot flying away, it's got a sort of a lime green arc of feathers in its green wings. And it's sort of things like that which you're picking up. Now, in terms of cognitive stuff, there's this thing is that fortunately you don't know how bad you are or where you are or where you have to work at any time. So it's sort of like climbing up a misty mountain, and you've been pushed down the mountain, and the mist is only a little bit further up, and so you just have to have the discipline and effort to push that next step up, and you're seeing things, and things that are sort of unexpected, like as you podcast or push yourself for a while, or do programming for a while, or push out, you making mistakes everywhere, and you work for a while, and you get tired, and your coherence drops off, and it's just pushing along. But you've got no sense of how you're going to go at the start of it, of anything, and where you're going to get. Oops, And that bird you heard there is a female bowerbird going on like that. It's hard to say that putting all the effort in doesn't mean that you sort of open up sideways things where you can actually improve. The forward improvement is very, very slow, but if you put a huge amount of effort, you can actually improve yourself to the side effort going forward. And I just hope this helps other dudes out there who are in the same boat. So you don't necessarily improve all that much. So like in typing speed, fairly massive, well, not a massive gain, just an average gain first off, and then just sideward movement for a long while as you're improving. I'll go back and do a few more typing tests to see how I'm doing, and just memorizing where things are. Sort of change the way you do things, i.e. religiously putting tools back so you don't forget where they are, religiously making sure you put everything in the same place everywhere, putting things down. And put an effort there, but you certainly are aware of your limitations, and it just takes a while, I think, to figure out what everyone's agenda is. And I think you can safely say that that you're not in everyone's agenda. There's no one in particular who's got an agenda for getting you up and going. You just have to pick yourself off, dust yourself off, and get going. There's nothing to crawl to. There's nothing to support you. You've got to get going. Well, it's about to rain here, and so I'm going to go and get the clothes off the line. At least I'm programmed to do that. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.